again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as it appears on the WWE Network, and hopefully add a little historical context to them to boot. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 6, where we will be taking a look at the television, which was taped on Wednesday, February 3rd, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets beginning on Saturday, February 6th, 1982. And Roman, bring in right now. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. Looking forward to talking about Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling on another podcast. And I wanted to wish everybody out there a happy new year, and thank you for supporting us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your patronage here. And, you know, if you want a little bit more of us, and I know that you do, or just want to reach out to us and then leave a comment or ask a question, you can do so via Twitter and Facebook. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod. Just look for the logo. Two of our features are very popular on this day in JCP TV history, and hashtag EverydayArn, where we post video clips celebrating the greatness that was Jim Crockett Promotions television on the weekend, as well as Arn Anderson. And I look at this stuff as educational tools. I really do. There's a lot to learn from these clips, especially from Arn Anderson. And, you know, if you really want to follow along with us here, and, hey, if you just want to listen to the shows and not follow along by watching them, you can do that as well, too. Hopefully we continue to entertain you, and hopefully you continue to pick some things up as you listen into the show. But if you want to follow along and watch with us, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network. We are not affiliated, obviously, but I am a proponent of the network, as WWE owns the rights to a lot of footage I grew up with and that I adore. So if you subscribe and watch, they know it. So I'm trying to keep them interested in it, and there's still a lot out there to be cleaned up. They are sitting on just a gold mine worth of stuff. You know, somebody's got to digitize it, archive it, deliver it to the masses, and I'm greedy. I want it. I want them to keep doing this stuff. I big fan. I'm not in love of everything that they do with the show sometimes. Sometimes their choices and, voiceover music and things like that, or overdub music, I should say. That sort of stuff kind of drives me nuts, but hey, it's completely understandable. But Roman, last week on the show, it was a very good show, as we set up a lot of stuff, a lot more stuff entering the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament. We had Eddie Graham named as the tournament chairman. We had the official expansion into Florida. We had a new reason of why Ole Anderson and Gene Anderson were stripped, because he had chosen Buzz Sawyer but happened to have it go down a day too late. So after about the first 6 weeks of the year here or so, Roman, what are your thoughts as we have started 1982, which may have been off to a little bit of a rickety start when it comes to who contributed the most to Jim Crockett Promotions in 1981, but we seem to be very much on track here with this NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would much rather talk about the NWA Tag Team Tournament than the Who Contributed the Most contest that just went absolutely nowhere. Lots of excitement has happened in the Mid-Atlantic due to this Tag Team Tournament. You know, the influx of talent of people from the AWA, the WWF, interesting to see footage from those companies airing on Mid-Atlantic TV. You know, years later, of course, stuff like that would not happen. So it's been an interesting 6 weeks.
When we get to the end of the show and we run down the results, I'll have a couple out of Leroy McGurk's sad territory out there in Arkansas and Oklahoma and parts of Missouri. This is where George Scott went out to, renamed it Midwest Championship Wrestling, and looked to possibly buy a stake in the promotion, grabbed a bunch of older guys and younger talent that had been working in Jim Crockett and rolled on out west. And the territory at this point, in its first month coming to an end, still alive. As we taped this show at the WPCQ Studios, they held their weekly Wednesday show in Springfield, Missouri. Listen to this lineup. Attendance estimated to be about 1,200. And I believe this was from, I'm not sure if this was from one of the Terry Justice newsletters, or I'm not sure which one it was from with these results, but Doug Summers drew Terry Gibbs, Bruno Sammartino Jr. defeated Swede Hansen by disqualification. And, you know, Summers and Gibbs had been working the undercards in 81, if I'm not mistaken, towards late 81 in Mid-Atlantic. Bruno Sammartino Jr. had definitely been there. Of course, Swede Hansen was a legend in Mid-Atlantic. Eddie Mansfield defeated Tom Jones. Tom Jones was spent much of his time working out there in Mississippi, Arkansas, in the Mid-South, that area over there. Eddie Mansfield happened to be working a couple dates for Mid-Atlantic proper around this time as well, too, as he would be working around Georgia as well. Frank Hill and Paul Jones defeated Ali Bay and El Toro, and Andre the Giant defeated Jimmy Snuka. And I can imagine what that would have been like in Springfield, Missouri, in front of 1,200 people. It had to have been the ultimate in larger than life in a territory that was built on a lot of junior heavyweights and had a lot of guys out there who weren't exactly too dynamic. Like your Pork Chop Cashes and Tom Jones and Frank Hills and some of the gentlemen like that. To have Jimmy Snuka, Paul Orndorff out there at one time, and then certainly Andre the Giant coming in is certainly must have been something else. But that was enough digression there away from, as I mentioned, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling proper. The Carolinas, and Bob Cottle and David Crockett, once again, the hosts of the show. A very interesting case this week when it came to the opening of the show. A lot of weeks I will lament the fact that Don Ray's Got to Have Love and has, of course, been overdubbed by the music chosen by WWE to play over that so they don't face any rights violations. And this week, we got a situation where Jimmy Valiant started the show by coming out. So we had the overdub of the music that was playing over the original Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling theme that ended up continuing to play when Jimmy Valiant came out there to then cover up Boy from New York City. This went on for a full minute until finally the overdub stopped and Boy from New York City was still playing. And Jimmy Valiant was ranting. And Jimmy Valiant's a fighter. And he's going to fight Ivan Koloff. And Ivan Koloff was in the ring. And Jimmy Valiant was screaming. And you didn't really know what was going on because nobody had focused on Ivan Koloff. So Jimmy Valiant's going nuts, screaming about everything. And Ivan Koloff's offset. And we're not even sure how this lays out until a little bit later on. Because once Jimmy Valiant disappears, then we get NWA representative Sandy Scott coming in. And we got a little bit of calm to open the show as we reset everything. And Bob, Sandy, and David run down what we're going to see on the show, including the introductions for our first match, which features Ivan Koloff.
Sandy, our NWA representative, what about our tag team championship tournament, Sandy?
Man, I tell you, it's really, really growing. More and more people are calling. More tag teams are calling. Putting up the entrance fee, $1,000. And it's coming your way.
$25,000 prize money in each city, Sandy.
It sure is. It's a lot of money, and it can come in handy to top teams.
Fans, and as Sandy says, the wrestlers are coming from all over the world. That's the top teams around the world. Speaking of top teams and belts, here are the World Tag Team Championship belts, David. Now, what about the other belts?
That's right. The World Heavyweight Champion, Ric Flair, he leads a tough schedule. He's definitely got his problems in this area, and he's going to be
That's
with
right.
us.
That's right.
And then we have another man, Roddy Piper. Now, he leads a tough schedule. You know, he wants these World Tag Team belts. He has a partner. He's wrestling here. He won't tell us who it is, so we're going to find out. Maybe this might be his main man, so to speak. And then we have the United States Heavyweight Champion, Sergeant Slaughter. He's definitely got it tough. He's got a young man on his tail that he cannot shake.
Absolutely. Yes. Fans, as David says, it's just going to be an exciting hour. And we're about ready now with it, action. So let's go up to the ring as we've got in the ring right now, ready to go. David, the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff, is in the ring and with his partner, Austin Idol.
Well, Roman, there we hear the introduction of the show and our first match, Ivan Koloff and Austin Idol against Vinnie Valentino and Don Gilbert. You heard David Crockett kind of run down the show. They introduced Sandy Scott out there. You had a raving Jimmy Valiant still left a vapor trail on the way back to the locker room there and fired up Ivan Koloff, who was standing in the ring. Those two during house shows would be around the circuit feuding over the NWA Mid-Atlantic Television Championship, not just locally in the Carolinas, but up in Ontario, in Toronto as well, for the Tunnies. And as we go into this first match here, Roman, you got your boy Austin Idol out there another week David Taub, who's done a great job reviewing these shows over at the Mid-Atlantic Gateway, astutely points out third straight week in a row, Austin Idol is rocking a different color, is aware of people out there watching on their color TVs. And this was not a long match. It went about 4 minutes or so. It was a rather sloppy match at points as well, too. What were your thoughts on the introduction of the show and on this battle of Koloff and Idol, who, as we'll find out later on in the show, are made official for the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament?
Well, I thought it was funny in this match that Ivan was in the ring ready to lock up, and Idol was taking a sweet time taking his robe off. And Idol was never shy from the spotlight, and he wanted the spotlight on him as long as he could. And it was just kind of funny to see how long he took to take his robe off before Ivan was finally able to lock up. But the finish is something that was pretty awkward. When Idol went to pull Gilbert off the canvas to administer some more punishment, the ref counted him down for a three count. And you can see the confused look on Idol's face. The commentators were confused. It was just a very awkward way to end that match.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what happened there myself. I've never recall Austin Idol ever finishing anyone with a over-the-knee backbreaker. He may have at some point, but Idol picked Gilbert up, gave him a backbreaker over his knee, went down to pin him, and Dave Hebner, who was our referee for the entire show, counted to three. And even though Idol was starting to yank him up, Hebner waved him off, said, nope, that's it. and we were done. That was that, and Ivan Koloff, Austin Idol, exited stage left, and nothing else was ever spoke about it again. We then ended up going to break, came back. Ricky Steamboat had joined Bob Cottle. And a couple of notes from last week. If you recall, there was the mention or there was the tape that was shown of the AWA, former AWA tag team champions, the East-West connection of Adrian Adonis and Jesse the Body Ventura. Now, here's the deal with that. The rest of that match that they said was going to be shown was not shown. If you recall what that match looked like last week, Roman, I don't think that was a tragedy. Do you?
No, I think everybody can draw their own conclusion that Adonis and Ventura were going to emerge victorious in that contest.
Yes, yeah, it wasn't much to watch there with their opponents either, as Mean Gene Okerlund would say about the AWA All-Star Wrestling television tapings, a bunch of left-handed TV tapings in a garage up there in Minneapolis. So landed that shot as WWF. He ended up going there. Ricky Steamboat over there with Bob Cottle. And here's the other thing I wanted to mention that was a change from last week of something that we mentioned. We mentioned that Jay Youngblood and Ric Flair were going to face off on Mid-Atlantic, and that's a little bit of a fib. The reason why is they faced off on Worldwide Wrestling that week, which was taped ahead of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, of course, in the same studio. Because of that, they were able to play clips of that match and insert them into Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, but we did not get the whole match, which is unfortunate because the 8 minutes of the match that we got, that probably went 10 or 15, I'm not even sure what it went, were excellent. Why were they excellent? Because it was Jay Youngblood and it was Ric Flair. And to make it a little more sweet and have some extra icing on the cake, when they threw it to the match, on commentary, we had Ray Stevens and Roddy Piper bantering back and forth. And I got to play a little bit of this right here. Roman and I have talked about it every week, how much these two bring to the table as far as when they add guest commentary, and they were just beating on each other, which is, of course, fantastic, whether in the ring or on the mic.
Well, Mr. Piper, and I use the word Mr. very loosely, I was invited here to help do the commentating.
That's correct. I don't care.
And, well, that's beside the point. I was invited here, and not too many people tell me what to do, and least of all, you're not going to tell me what to do, so I'm going to stay here.
Listen, Mr. Stevens, if I tell you to go, it's best you should go.
Well, I tell you what, you can tell a lot of people a lot of things, but you don't tell me nothing.
I would lower myself to argue with this because the conversation just bores me.
Well, all right. Well, Roddy won't stay here. We've got a heck of a match in the ring, though, with the world's heavyweight champion Ric Flair against Jay Youngblood. Main event,
anywhere in the country.
This could be a main event in Madison Square Garden, the Cow Palace, Chicago, anywhere in the world. Two tremendous wrestlers. Ric Flair, Mr. Excitement himself.
He is that.
Very, very colorful man to watch. The most exciting man in professional wrestling, a great wrestler, and that's why he's a world champion.
Nice tackle there by Youngblood. Flair ducks under. Oh. Youngblood counters with a hip toss.
Youngblood looking very, very impressive against the world heavyweight champion.
But look
champion.
At Flair, he looks angry here.
There you hear Ray the Crippler Stevens put over Nature Boy Ric Flair. A lot of people point to Ric Flair's influences in his career, being trained by Vern Gagne, having the Iron Sheik, I believe, was in that camp. Jim Brunzel, Greg Gagne were around that time as well. Ken Patera had already broken in not long before that. Bob Bruggers, I believe, was around that time. Sergeant Slaughter was damn near around that time, too. Just an incredible group of talent. And then being seen by Wahoo, being plucked by him, brought over to Jim Crockett Promotions, and all of the stuff that he did with Ricky Steamboat, the influence that he had, being teamed up with Rip Hawk, all of the stuff that he learned on the fly, and incredible strides that he made, all of the stories of him wanting to be Rambling Ricky Rhodes early on in his career, and taking the Nature Boy moniker from Buddy Rogers. But Ray Stevens was one of the biggest influences on Ric Flair, not only when you see over the turnbuckle bump that he would take in the corner, but I mean, look at the way Ric Flair has saved his money. Nobody has been a better financial planner for Ric Flair than Ray Stevens, and I mean that in the worst of ways. They both actually inspired me and taught me how to save money, which is why I'm in the position I'm in right now. But Ray Stevens and Ric Flair were truly two peas in a pod, and Stevens put Flair over a lot last week. You hear him put him over on this match this week, and I mean, how could you not put over this match? We only got to see about 8 minutes of it, Roman, but my God, you know, it was 8 minutes of Jay Youngblood, one of the best damn baby faces of the era, and Ric Flair, one of the greatest of all time, just humming along. It was fantastic.
This was a very exciting match to watch, and it's one that it is a shame we didn't get to see the whole match. Back and forth action, and something I noticed right away is that this was not the typical Flair match that people would get accustomed to later on, you know, like when he would wrestle Sting. You could close your eyes and call the spots. I mean, they were so predictable. But this match with Steamboat was with Youngblood was back and forth, and it was excitement. And Flair was definitely in heel mode. There was one part where he even yelled at the ref, "You don't tell me how to wrestle." He would shove Youngblood down and start strutting around the ring. After the contest, he attacked Youngblood, shoved the ref down. Flair was definitely in heel mode in this match, but this was an exciting match. It was definitely one of the highlights of this TV program.
Talk about Ric Flair healing it up here, continuing to be very aggressive as the match went on, including after the bell.
Small package. Oh, somehow, again, the champion manages to kick out.
And there's a,
as we
there's
hear
the time
bell,
limit.
The bell is rung. The time limit is over. But trying to convince Flair the match is over, apparently.
There you hear Ric Flair continuing to stay on Jay Youngblood after the bell, delivered a knee to the back, continued to stay on top of him, shoved the referee away. This caused Ricky Steamboat to run out. It caused Jake Roberts to run out, as well as a couple of other people. Did not lead to a brawl or anything like that. Ric Flair, though, stayed aggressive, shoving those guys. Those guys shoved him back, asked him what the heck he was doing. You know, what was wrong with him? You know, we were still at a point now with Ric Flair where he was the world champion, but he was the conquering hero. He was bringing the NWA championship back home. And he had a lot of ups and downs, but he was looked at as a babyface at this time. So him bringing out the aggressiveness with Jay Youngblood and beginning to kind of drop hints that he was going to get nastier and nastier, we will end up seeing that come to pass. We'll also start seeing somebody who has been one of the most noted rule breakers and biggest annoyances start to flip over to the other side as this happens as well, too. So this ride as we go through 1982 is certainly going to be something else. But Ricky Steamboat, then, you know, they got back from break. He talked a little bit about some of the challenges that Ric Flair was going to be facing, including not only himself, but Jay Youngblood, now putting himself in great position after that match, and Tommy Rich as well, who we will see a little bit later on. After Ricky Steamboat, we then go to break, come back with Bob Cottle, stands the World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair, and he has got a lot to say about the footage that we just saw, as well as about a guy who Ricky Steamboat just name-dropped, Tommy Rich. Here's a couple of comments from Ric Flair to begin this interview.
Rick, that was a tremendous match in there with Jay Youngblood, and the line of contenders for this belt right here, it just continues to grow.
Well, that's right. Any man in professional wrestling that's a man at all, that's honest with himself and honest with the people, would be a fool not to admit that he doesn't want to wear this more than anything in the world. This means $500,000 a year. It means all the prestige and notoriety that any athlete could ever attain in any sport. This is what it's all about. The list, right, is endless. Now, the deal with Youngblood, I'm telling you, just like I told the people on that prior show, that I never heard a bell. And what the world champion says goes. If I don't hear the bell, then you can bet it never rang. Now, Steamboat, Tommy Rich, Youngblood, it makes no difference. You guys want this, I've got it. And I say, come ahead. This is what it's all about. 10 pounds of gold.
Speaking of Tommy Rich, Wildfire Tommy Rich, we've got a tape of him.
All right, let's see the tape on Tommy Rich.
All right, fans, let's watch him right now. Wildfire Tommy Rich, here it is.
They then throw to a tape of Tommy Rich wrestling at the Charlotte Park Center against Tony Russo. This was a tape of a match from a couple of months from before. There's a little bit of silence at the beginning before Ric Flair and Bob Cottle chime in. I'm not sure if they were running a local, talking about a local spot at that time or exactly what it is, but there's just a little bit of silence there before the guys start talking to each other. And Bob actually brings up a point that Rick wants to make about having friends in the wrestling business, especially where he's at right now. And maybe it gives a little peek into his paranoia and into his attitude change that seems to be taking place with everyone.
But as you say, he is very, very impressive. Just one of the long list that are really after you and after that belt. But I tell you, and he's gonna be around. He's gonna be here. You're gonna have to face him. And Rick, in all probability, you're gonna have to face a number of your friends in that ring.
Well, let me explain something to you right now. I'm glad you put that question to me, because the difference between friendship and business is a fine line. Now, I have a lot of acquaintances. Not very many friends in the world of professional wrestling, a lot of acquaintances. Right. But when it comes to this 10 pounds of gold, Tommy Rich, Steamboat, Ole Anderson, Jake Roberts, Mulligan Jr., Youngblood, it makes no difference. When we get in that ring, we're talking 120% business. If they want to wear this, they're going to have to wear me out.
They all look alike across the ring.
That's right. They all look alike. They look like someone that wants to take away something from me that I bled and sweat 9 years to get.
So you hear Ric Flair talk about some of the challenges he is facing as NWA champion, as well as some words about Tommy Rich as well. He then leads into a couple of his best catchphrases as we end the interview.
You know, years ago I used to stand out here and tell all the people that I was a kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing, Cadillac-driving son of a gun, tailor-made clothes, diamond rings, and any woman I ever wanted, just like that. And that was before I became the world champion, so you can imagine what kind of lifestyle I got now. Ladies and gentlemen, Tommy Rich, Steamboat, Youngblood, it makes no difference. You're looking at the world champion, and remember one thing, diamonds are forever.
Okay, fans, there it is, right here from the world champion himself, Ric Flair.
Roman, every week we marvel over the interviews on this show, and we're going to have a chance to do that in a little while as well, too. Another superfecta of interviews that we keep seeing week after week after week on TV, but we haven't seen up until this point in the year. We have not seen the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, and we get to see him in all of his glory in a short match against Jay Youngblood, and then out there commentating and having a lot of stick time to tear it up there next to Bob Cottle, talking about the Tommy Rich match that was taking place, talking about his match with Jay Youngblood, the challenges he faces from Ricky Steamboat, as well as many others. Any thoughts on Ric Flair there putting on a vintage performance?
Something about Ric Flair in this interview, you could kind of see the genesis of the Nature Boy character, the guy that would refer to himself as the dirtiest player in the game. He says the belt means $500,000 a year to him. And later on, he would say, friends, acquaintances, they're all challengers. And just some of the verbiage, some of the words he would say in there would let you know how important that title was. He would talk about how he had women before he had the belt. So how do you think, how many women is he going to have after the belt? How's his lifestyle going to change? And you could kind of see the arrogance coming out of him about who he is. And this is very, like, an important interview. You know, this last 5 minutes or so of Flair, you could see his personality starting to come to the surface. And it's the Ric Flair that, frankly, most people grew to know and love.
Well, and yeah, and then, you know, initially grew to hate in that area. Right up until the plane crash, comes back from the plane crash, you double down on it, goes into the feud with Ricky Steamboat. The idea of Ric Flair as babyface was a relatively new concept. It came on because of everything that had taken place and really the arrival of Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper, Greg Valentine, Jimmy Snuka, Ray Stevens, Gene Anderson, that group there, that was the reason that Ric Flair had gone over to the other side. And as I mentioned earlier on, as 1982 goes on, we see the continuation of Ric Flair onto this side, back to the dark side of the ledger. And you're right, you know, you hear him kind of change his game and kind of basically double down for all of those fans in the Mid-Atlantic, pointing out that, hey, this is the way it's always been. This is what it's always been expected of me. This is what I've expected of myself. This is what I've been telling you people about. Now I have this world title. I ain't letting that go. And you see there's a, you know, the champion's arrogance and his doubling down on it and his justification of it. That's the one thing about heels, you know. There should be a shred of truth into something, you know, that they hold on to. There needs to be something there. For Ric Flair, he's got that justification on why he needs to act the way that he does to hold on to that title and the subtleties that he goes through. Although, not too many subtleties when it came to that match with Jay Youngblood, kind of moving in that direction. As we move on, I got a little bit of a bonus here. Now, this isn't going to be a bonus for anybody out there who has watched these shows in the past on WWE 24/7 or WWE Classic. These localized promos come from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and we've heard Big Bill Ward hype up Ann Arbor before. You could send a self-addressed stamped envelope and pick yourself up a Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling sticker, as well as hearing some interviews from many of the talents that would be on tour up into the Michigan area relatively soon, or at least that's what they were hyping. And when it comes to the WWE Network versions of the show, these promos do not air. There's one later on with Porkchop Cash and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. I will spare you from that one, as there wasn't a whole lot to hear there. But this one, you know, wasn't the best or most refined promo in the world, but it was two really big, tough guys who were going to be a heavy presence in Mid-Atlantic here in the next couple of weeks. One of which we had already known about for quite some time, Ole Anderson, and the other, a returning Stan the Lariat Hansen.
Let's take time for this commercial message about the Mid-Atlantic wrestling events coming up in your area.
Fans, it's a real pleasure again to remind you that wrestling will soon be returning to Ann Arbor. And some of the top NWA, National Wrestling Alliance stars, including such great names as Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen.
Well, there's a lot of great stars, certainly with the NWA, and I think the people in this area are going to be privileged to be seeing some great matches in the very near future. I know we get letters from people all over the Michigan area, people here in Ann Arbor, people in Saginaw, people in Lansing, people in Grand Rapids. Already, the letters coming in demanding to see the two greatest wrestlers in the world today, the ones that you're privileged to look at right now. I'm talking about Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson. A lot of great tag teams in the world, I grant you that. When we talk about tag teams, we have to talk about the Funks and the Briscoes and the Steamboats and the Youngbloods and the Jake Roberts and the Stevens and the Pattersons, the Mulligans. But the two greatest wrestlers in wrestling in a tag team situation or in a single are the ones that you see right now. Once again, Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson. Where else are they going to find people of this size, this great wrestling caliber? I don't think it's anywhere in the world, any place else that could be better than we are, right, Stan?
I don't think so either. You know, nothing's happened around Michigan in a long time, not since the Cowboys came up here this year in the Superdome and whatever the place was, the Silver Dome, and won the Super Bowl. Dallas Cowboys, Texas, brother, that's what it's all about. People up here never seen no athletes like the people from Texas. Well, I'm from Texas, and Ole Anderson, he's from Texas, too, in his heart, because he's a fighter, and we are fighters. And whether it be the Funks or the Briscoes, the Mulligans, it doesn't matter who it is, because we're out here to beat people. We take on all comers, Ray Stevens, Dusty Rhodes. It doesn't matter, because the Lariat and the Hook, they're going to come to this area someday, because people want to see athletes. And that's what we are. They want to see people get out there and fight 110%, and we do it. They want to see people get out there and go for the juggler when it's time to go for the juggler. And we do it. Why do we do it? Because we're winners. And winning means everything to us. Winning means everything. Just like it does in Texas. We're going to teach the people in this area what winning is all about.
Many people in that area already knew exactly what Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen could do, as that was the Sheik's old territory, the Georgia Championship Wrestling. With help of the WTBS television network and the Satcom 1 satellite that the signal was being beamed all across the country, could thank there to get them so well known up there, running tours in Michigan, running tours in Ohio, obviously the spheres of influence that Jim Crockett Promotions had in Knoxville, Tennessee, as well as with the Tunneys in Toronto. This was a big time for the southern half of the United States, and Ole Anderson, Eddie Graham, the Briscoes, Jim Crockett, George Scott, anybody else who had a stake in the southeastern United States at that time. It was red hot, you know, Florida in the early 80s, late 70s, you know, on fire. The same thing with the Crocketts as well, too. Really good stuff. And with Watts, you know, then came after that, as strong as they were. Just the engine of the country when it came to pro wrestling. And, of course, I'm a little bit biased here, but certainly being geared up from the southeast. And, Roman, I don't know what that's got to do with the fact that those promos don't air on the WWE network, but a lot of the shows that you watch come from the old classics and from the old WWE 24/7 DVDs. And what are your thoughts on localized promos? I'm one of those kinds of guys that can actually sit there and watch an entire 8-hour reel of just localized promos from everywhere, whether they be Freddie Miller is screaming them out, or Tony Schiavone screaming them out on World Championship Wrestling, or whether they be Tony Schiavone stick in hand, or Rich Landrum, whoever it would be, interviewing the guys on a set somewhere. I love those things, and they're one of the lost parts of wrestling today for me. Are you as big of a mark of those as I am?
No, I used to think they were a lot of fun. When you think of Ole, you think of him teaming with Gene or with Arn, and always associate Ole with Stan Hansen, so it's kind of cool to see those two together. And yeah, some of these interviews are fun, and then some of them, to put it bluntly, should have been buried. Some of them should have never made it to the air, but you know, it's kind of fun to look back at some of these localized promos. Definitely,
it was like our Keith Larson one last week. A whole lot, yes, of the heavy breathing and the scratching of the chest and the oh yeah, it was a little bit rough. But we finally are going to move on to our second match. Great one on paper, at least as it began. Blackjack Mulligan Jr., the future Barry Windham, against Private Jim Nelson. Did I mention the future Barry Windham? Last week on the show, I theorized that Roddy Piper was trying to divide Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Jr. by making some comments that were meant to not only act as a bouquet being thrown to Junior, but also to shade and to slight Senior in the same breath as well, and kind of saying some things that could come across as divisive. And I say that, and then what we have this week is David Crockett.
There you see Jim Nelson. He jumps out to ask Sergeant Slaughter's advice, and he needs his advice too, because Blackjack Mulligan Jr. in there.
That's right, in against Junior. And
you know, Junior's a man on his own now. He really is. You know, He is a junior, but we need to find another name for him.
And not only
he's
that,
a man.
He's going to be taking out some of the hatred for slaughter right here.
Good drop kick.
Now, wait a second. Can't you be a man and be named Junior? I mean, we had Roy Jones Jr. I mean, he was a pretty tough guy and a hell of a fighter. I mean, we had Ken Norton Jr., the son of heavyweight champion boxer Ken Norton, who was a hell of a football player and a National Football League Hall of Famer. What is wrong with being called Junior? I would rather be a junior of good standing than have a different name from my father and be George Gulas. Where is this stuff coming from when it comes to Barry Windham and the name Barry Windham and Blackjack Mulligan Jr.? Did I miss something here? Why we need to strip Junior of his name?
I think they were just trying to establish Windham as a not riding on his father's coattails, but it's not every day that you hear a commentator say, we need to find a new name for him.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that catches your attention when you hear something like that.
I think he was Barry Windham in Florida before he, I'm trying to think of where he was because he was not having a good time,
yes,
I don't believe.
He was Windham in Florida, Mike, because I've got DVDs where he was teaming with a young Magnum TA, and he was going by Barry Windham in Florida in 82.
You heard Sergeant Slaughter come out there, and we still got a bunch of stuff going on when it comes to Sergeant Slaughter's $1,000 and all the battles taking place with the Mulligan family. This match went about 5 minutes or so. Basically, the story of it is that Mulligan Jr. had broken out of Sergeant Slaughter's Cobra Clutch after a show had gone off the air, which, according to Sergeant Slaughter, didn't count. He had continued to avoid Mulligan and try to stop him from going after his $1,000. Private Jim Nelson, who Sergeant Slaughter had taught the hold to, tried to lay it on Mulligan in this match. Windham, or Mulligan, see, here I go, was able to fight Nelson off, accidentally threw him over the top rope, which caused a disqualification at about the 5-minute and 9-second mark, and that was that. Sergeant Slaughter kind of faked getting into the ring, but of course slimed off like the heel that he was, which led to Blackjack Mulligan Jr. afterwards with Bob Cottle cut it a heated promo, daring Slaughter to get in the ring and saying he was going to continue to come after him, but it was made to move a storyline along, and that is what it did, but not a bad little 5-minute match. What did you think?
No, not at all. I thought it was a real good contest. And Sarge was in the corner of Nelson giving him advice every time he got thrown out of the ring. And I thought they did a really good job of planting the seed, not just for the people in the arena, but the people watching on television, that Mulligan Jr. can, in fact, get out of the Cobra Clutch. Now, granted, it wasn't the Cobra Clutch that Slaughter put on him, but it plants the seed. They've physically seen him get out of the Cobra Clutch, so now they think he can get out of the Cobra Clutch when Slaughter puts it on him. And I thought that was a nice way to kind of plant the seed and help build the storyline a little bit.
All right, now it's time for everybody to sit back, grab something, drink something, smoke something, whatever it is that you got there, so you can sit back with something. We spin the big wheel on the wall. The promo wheel, who are we going to end up with our foursome for our superfecta this week? We go by Big John Studd's name. There goes Ox Baker. There goes Jack Briscoe. There goes Ole and Gene Anderson. And it lands on these four: Roddy Piper, Sergeant Slaughter, Austin Idol, and Ivan Koloff.
Fans, here's Roddy Piper. You're going to be in a tag team match a little later.
You figured that out all by yourself?
You're
going
to tell us who your partner's going to be?
Yeah, I'll tell you nothing, you see. We're talking about $25,000. All these great minds are coming out here saying, oh, I'm going to team up with him, and I'm going to team up with him, and I'm going to do this. Well, let me tell you something. I didn't get where I am by spilling my guts, you fools. I didn't get where I am by talking. I'll tell you something, mister. I'll bring out my partner. You want to know who it is? I ain't telling you, because you're talking $25,000, brother, and I will kill to make the cut.
Roddy Piper, Sergeant Slaughter right here. You didn't get in the ring. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. was ready for you.
I don't know who I'm more upset with, Private Nelson or Mulligan Jr., but I'm telling you right now, Mulligan Jr., you say that I'm a coward and I'm afraid of you. I'm not afraid of any man. You say you got out of a Cobra Clutch. You got out of a Cobra Clutch, not Sergeant Slaughter's Cobra Clutch. And when the time comes, wherever it may be, I'm going to put that Cobra clutch on you. And 5 minutes, you got to get out of it. I don't think you're going to do it.
Fans, right now, here's Austin Ion, Alive and Koloff. Hey, you two guys look great up there together.
Because we are great. I'm going to go on record right now by saying that it's true, and I'm sure you can tell it's crystal clear that Ivan Koloff and myself are going to be teaming up to some extent. How much is none of your business, and it's none of your business either. But true, there's $25,000 on the line here.
That's in each
in
city.
Each city, Jackson, right. And then the world title belts.
That's right.
And Donald, you're looking right now, $25,000. I blow 25 grand on the blackjack table in Las Vegas, but those world titles are what Koloff and I will eventually end up with.
What about that, Ivan?
This is the biggest thing ever in wrestling, in the history of wrestling, this world tag team tournament. And we intend on walking out there with the American money and also with those World Tag Team belts. Now, as far as the TV belt goes, I'm going to take on all opponents, and that includes you, Valley.
All right, fans, that's it from Austin Idol, Ivan Koloff. We're about ready for action in the ring right now. Let's have our introduction now for our next match, one fall, with a 10-minute time limit. Our opponents, first from Atlanta at 265 pounds, here is Buck Brannigan. Buck Brannigan. Across the ring, his opponent from Denton, Texas, 240 pounds. Here is Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake Roberts, one fall, 10-minute time limit.
And there we get another great set of interviews this time around. Piper, Koloff, Idol, and Sergeant Slaughter. Once again, Austin Idol does not like to be shown up by Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper has not wanted to reveal who his tag team partner would be. Mentioned last week that that person is 6'7", damn near 400 pounds, and would make Abdullah the Butcher look like a Girl Scout, I believe the comparison was. Austin Idol, still not wanting to be outdone, continues to say, yeah, I'm teaming with Ivan Koloff, but I don't know. I might be teaming with somebody else. You never know. Come on, I said, well, why is your boy doing this? Can he accept the Russian Bear, a multiple-time tag team champion, former world heavyweight champion? Can't he just accept him as his everyday partner for this tournament?
You know, it, when you hear Piper and Idol, it's like two little kids, you know. Well, I'm not going to tell you either. I'm not going to tell who my partner is. And just the way they went back and forth. But, yeah, you know, in those series of interviews, you know, with Slaughter, he kind of illustrated the point I made earlier, is that about Mulligan Jr., you may have got out of the Cobra clutch, but you didn't get out of my Cobra clutch. And, you know, as a fan, when you hear something like that, you can't wait to see those two lock up. And you're hoping Slaughter can put the Cobra clutch on Mulligan Jr. to see, in fact, if he could get out of the Cobra clutch. But that was a good series of interviews there. And, yeah, Idol trying to be mysterious like Piper, not revealing who his partner is going to be, even though you can kind of put two and two together and see him and Ivan Koloff are going to team in the future.
I loved when you had heels that were like a bunch of mafia family heads, or it was a bunch of the crazy cartoon characters, like all the heads at the Legion of Doom, you know, figuring out how they're going to kill all of the super friends. And it's like, you know, you have Paul Jones is at one table and Sergeant Slaughter's at this table and Roddy Piper's at this table and Angelo Mosca's at this table, and nobody likes each other. Like, that's the best part, is they all hate each other. So you hear Slaughter and Piper last week. You know, their interactions as things go along when they are in a studio next to each other, it's amazing. Back to our match, Jake the Snake Roberts and Buck Brannigan. About another 5-minute match here. Ray the Crippler Stevens comes out for the first time today on commentary, where he not only talks about the match, but talks about Roberts' team with Jay Youngblood, who had been going after the NWA Mid-Atlantic Team Championship. Match to get Jake Roberts some time in, and for Ray Stevens to go out there and get over the NWA Tag Team Championship tournament. What'd you think of the match? The Roberts hit the Mr. Wrestling 2 coup de grace knee lift, and that was that.
Well, when I saw that match, I was thinking, I wonder if Jake has been watching films of the Andersons. He spent a good amount of time working on a body part, but there was nothing real significant in that match. Just Ray Stevens talking about the tournament, but Jake with an impressive knee lift to get the victory.
It was at this point that we get possibly the greatest interview of 1982 with Vinny Valentino and Don Gilbert, who did not exactly set the world on fire last week. Man, this is the way they all should be done.
Valentino and Don Gilbert. Don, you fellas had a rough match up there, no doubt about it.
Yeah, we sure did. And I'd just like to say a thing or two about these World Tag Team belts right here. You know, I said it before and I'll say it again, this has got to be the most exciting thing that's ever happened to the great sport of wrestling. And you got exciting teams coming in from all over the world. I'm excited about it. I know you are and the fans are, and I just
can't
wait.
That's right. We got two right up here in the ring that we're excited about, and right up there is Roddy Piper.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and pause that right there before I play anything else. Perfect. Perfect timing. Instead of having, you know, Keith Larson out there from the all the way from the mountain, and or Don Gilbert, who, you know, if I could just get a friend, you know, maybe I can win those tag team championships. Nope, what we get is Don Gilbert, man, I think I got something to say about these tag team championships. And Bob Cottle says, let's go to the ring, because that's where Roddy Piper is at. We need more of this. Back me up, Roman.
Yes. Why have an interview that goes 10 seconds? You have them both out there and only one's talking.
Yeah, what happened there?
Albeit brief, I don't get it.
I don't know what the heck happened there. It was so weird to trot them out there, unless they did cut a B-roll interview and maybe they messed up time and then they went, well, we got 10 seconds before we're supposed to be back and what we had this match scheduled for. So, because it wasn't even a 2.5 minute match. It was a very short match. It was Roddy Piper and a mystery opponent that he had hyped up as possibly his partner. Well, I'll tell you what, he was not 7 feet tall. He was not 400 pounds. He did not make Abdullah the Butcher look like Shirley Temple or a Girl Scout or any of that other stuff. It was just this pale old white dude who apparently was Rick Benfield, according to David Taub's wrap-up over at the Mid-Atlantic Gateway. I don't know. He never tagged in. We never really saw him. We got Roddy Piper in full Roddy Piper attack mode. We got Roddy Piper in the, oh yeah, we forget he was crazy and this is how he wrestled mode and how people actually took him seriously, because he wasn't just all mouth as the guy with the kilt and the bagpipes. He would actually do some crazy things the way his crazy mouth would run. He would go out there and mess people up, throw thumbs in the eyes, deliver knees, attack, and go on the offensive. And that's exactly what he did to Keith Larson and Tony Anthony. But before we begin, we will hear Roddy Piper introduce himself and his partner.
And who is this with Roddy Piper? Roddy Piper and his partner now in the ring as we're going to watch him go against Keith Larson and Tony Anthony. And Roddy Piper says, one in and one out.
I don't tell nobody what I do when I do. I got me a man. I found him trolling under bridges, mister. I got him for my partner. He's going to stay there. I'll do it by myself.
Oh, Roddy Piper's going to do it by himself.
Bob Cottle not impressed with hearing Roddy Piper is going to do it by himself, but he did, as he just went to work on Tony Anthony and Keith Larson. Beat them both up, just brawled away. Ends up getting the win over Keith Larson with a back suplex after the match. Roddy Piper then tagged his partner. Went about 2 minutes and 20 seconds, and then it was time for Roddy to jump back on the microphone. Now, before we go to the show-closing promo of Roddy Piper, Roman, what did you think about this match and the presentation of what Piper did, how he did it, just still being the... You know, you talked about the guy trolling under bridges. You know, Roddy Piper was a troll before we knew what the definition of troll truly was in this day and age. And he was out there truly trolling away by bringing this random dude there and doesn't even beat him up like Mick Foley did to Lee Scott and his other tag team partners in WCW afterwards. Nope, just tags him in, slaps his little pasty self, goes over, cuts an interview as the guy slunk back to the locker room. And that was that.
This match showed Piper as a badass. I mean, he wrestled very aggressively in this contest. And in fact, there was one point in there where Larson got in a little bit of offense and chopped Piper, who ended up being beat red. And you can see it in the interview. Piper's chest is beat red and he completely no-sold the chops. And it just Piper it's not very often you see him this aggressive. He almost seemed angry. You know, he was out to prove a point, and I thought it was kind of funny, even though it wasn't designed to be funny, to tag his partner after the match was over. It was just something Piper, I'm sure, came up with that idea himself. That just was classic Piper right there.
An absolute troll. And again, you know, that's with Roddy Piper being as small as he was, he had to have the big mouth and to really draw heat and to draw people in. But then it's like, you know, he's got to get in there and wrestle. And you see the size of the Sergeant Slaughters, and you know the brutality of the Gene Andersons, and you know the physicalities of the Greg Valentines and the overall techniques of the Ric Flair and the scientific stylings of the Ricky Steamboat. It's like, what does Roddy Piper have? What he has is the element of surprise. What he has is going crazy, and he would turn that on. Good guy or bad guy, no matter what road he was taking, Roddy Piper could just, you know, and he'd go crazy and throw the thumb to the eye, throw the kick in the groin, the punch in the face, and off to the races we went.
Roddy Piper didn't get his partner into the ring. Why we didn't see any action from Roddy Piper's partner?
Didn't see no action. See, Roddy Piper don't need nobody. Roddy Piper can do it on his own. Roddy Piper don't need nobody for nothing. But the best part about Roddy Piper is he has the mind of a genius. He knows all. You see, I just spent 4 minutes in the ring there, 5 minutes in the ring, gets two guys. Don't even take a hard breath. I don't take nothing hard, you see, except my partner. 7 foot tall. You want to know who he is? I ain't going to tell you nothing, sucker. I don't need to tell you nothing, suckers. You know what? I proved myself. $25,000 we're talking. $25,000. How much did you make last year? I'm talking about one night world titles I'm talking about. Let me tell you something. I'm telling you, I don't care what you think. I will tell you, my partner, when I step in the ring. That's why the wrestling world is crumbling. When RP talks, people will listen. Because they don't know like I know, do they?
You know what? They don't really know like RP knows, do they? Because it's impossible to know what RP's thinking. Because if you figure out what he's thinking, well, it'll just change his mind, obviously. Roddy Piper out there with Bob Caudle to end the show. Not the flashiest show in the world, but very effective moving some things forward. And it was a very, very solid show. Certainly wasn't dynamic, but some really good stuff.
Yes, I enjoyed the show. You know, the Flair Youngblood match, like I said, I would have loved to have seen the whole match. I thought the Mulligan Jr. Zukov match had some excitement. The crowd was into that. Piper just going ballistic at the end. And kind of interesting. I mean, I know it's wrestling and heights and weights get exaggerated, but Piper said his partner was 6'7", and then this week his partner's 7 feet tall. Is it the same guy? Is it a different guy? It's just kind of weird how he grew 5 inches from 1 week to the next.
I have a feeling I know who this guy is, and you know what? They were never clear on this guy's height as things went along in his career anyway. Is he would always bill himself as much bigger and taller than he would really end up being, but we won't spoil those secrets. Unfortunately, we will have to wait 2 weeks for the next show. You won't. You're only going to wait 1 week, hopefully, unless we have any other audio disasters. But you're going to wait 1 week for a show that's going to take place 2 weeks from now because, for whatever reason, the next episode that would normally be up on the WWE Network for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, the show that would have aired on February 13th that was taped on Wednesday, February 10th, is not on the network, so we will have to skip ahead as I don't have a copy of that or any related programming from that week, so we are stuck and we'll have to wait for the show that was taped on Wednesday, February 17th, and went ahead and was aired on Saturday, February 20th. We will be back for that show. We'll give you the rundown of what's happening there here in a moment. But before I run into the results from the week that took place, Roman, you got any other thoughts on any portions of the show or any of the matches that took place on it?
Yeah, there was something I wanted to talk about a little earlier. It was just during the Tommy Rich Russo match. I thought it was interesting that towards the end, he went for the Luthez press and Russo didn't sell it. Russo stood up and no-sold Tommy Rich's finisher. And then immediately Russo threw Rich into the ropes, and Rich came off and hit him with the Luthez press for the victory. But I just thought that was kind of interesting, that why they would error a guy no-selling a jobber or an enhancement talent. You know, I know they like to be referred to no-selling a top superstar's finishing move. Why they would air that? I just thought that was something a little unusual.
Well, thankfully you didn't call him a carpenter, because he certainly didn't help to build anything there. Yeah, I mean, it's just very awkward. And, you know, it's one of those things, too. The tape was from so much earlier. It was not very often, you know, you would get tapes from somewhere, and it's not like they could go ahead and go cut. You know, sometimes they had to get a tape out and send it down to somewhere, and they would just, if there was a botch or if there was something they didn't like or they wanted to change history, they just wouldn't show the end. They would come up with some reason not show the end. And why they didn't do that there, I don't know, especially because it was just Ric Flair talking about it. And you could have just had something happen and then show Tommy Rich with his hand getting raised. But yeah, I mean, Tony Russo, who, you know, at times as things went on, you know, he was almost like perfectly round. You know, sometimes like with Russo, it's like if he landed on his back, would he be able to roll over and get back up? Or, you know, would he be like a weeble wobble? Can he not actually fall down? He's like a human bop bag. And that's kind of what he was like with that with that Fez press with Tommy Rich. Certainly did not turn out too good there. But, so they can't all be winners. The main point of that segment, of course, was obviously because Tommy Rich was going to be playing some roles as time went along. Not only facing Ric Flair out in Ohio and other places like that, but of course when they would run in Michigan as well too. And the alliance they had down in Georgia with Ole Anderson booking down there. So everything working out all swimmingly right now between all of the groups. Of course, we'll have to see how all of that plays out as the future rolls on. Now we will run down the results of the week since we had taped TV on Wednesday, February 3rd. On Wednesday, February 4th in Concord, North Carolina at the Barbara Scotia College Gym, the main event saw Roddy Piper face off against Ricky Steamboat. On Friday in Charleston, South Carolina at the County Hall, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated John Studd. In Knoxville, Tennessee, at Chilloway Park on Friday, February 5th, Tommy Rich defeated the Masked Superstar by disqualification as Roddy Piper defeated Michael Hayes in the semi-main event. Also on that show, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Johnny Weaver knocked off Kevin Sullivan and Lord Alfred Hayes. In Lynchburg, Virginia that night, Ricky Steamboat and Jimmy Valiant battled to a double disqualification with Ivan Koloff and Austin Idol as Ray Stevens defeated the Ninja by DQ. On Saturday morning, we got the taping of Knoxville Television at WBIR Studios over there with Les Thatcher. Later that night in Cincinnati, Ohio, NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair defeated John Studd as Ricky Steamboat defeated Roddy Piper by DQ. In Morristown, Tennessee, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. defeated Kevin Sullivan by disqualification, and Johnny Weaver defeated Lord Alfred Hayes in a lumberjack match. In Spartanburg, South Carolina, Ray Stevens and Porkchop Cash defeated Gene Anderson and the Ninja as Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated Austin Idol by disqualification. On Sunday in Roanoke on February 7th, NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair defeated Blackjack Mulligan Jr. Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a no DQ match, and Ray Stevens defeated Austin Idol, which led to February 7th in Greensboro, North Carolina at the Coliseum. We got our very first World Tag Team Championship Tournament for $25,000. The tag team tournament shaped up like this in the first round. Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura in from the AWA defeated Terry Taylor and Tim Horner. Ray Stevens and Pat Patterson, who came down from the WWF, defeated Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito, who could have driven down in the same car with Pat. Jimmy Valiant and Johnny Weaver knocked off Ivan Koloff and Austin Idol by disqualification. Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen defeated Jay Youngblood and Jake Roberts to round out the first round. In the semifinals, Stevens and Patterson defeated Adonis and Ventura, and Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen knocked off Jimmy Valiant and Johnny Weaver. And the winners in the finals of our very first $25,000 Regional Tag Team Championship Tournament Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen defeated Ray Stevens and Pat Patterson to win the finals. Also on the show, Sergeant Slaughter defeated Blackjack Mulligan Jr. via pinfall, and Ricky Steamboat defeated NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair by disqualification in just under 40 minutes. On Monday night in Greenville, South Carolina, Flair went out and defeated Harley Race as Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff by DQ. On Tuesday in Columbia, on February 9th, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated Sergeant Slaughter in a lumberjack match as Jake Roberts defeated Big John Studd by DQ. We don't have any results from February 9th in Raleigh, but in Weldon, North Carolina, on the same night, Ricky Steamboat defeated Roddy Piper as Jimmy Valiant and Johnny Weider defeated Austin Idol and Ivan Koloff. Wednesday would take us back to Charlotte, to WPCQ Studios, where we would get our tapings of Worldwide Wrestling and Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. Because we will not have a show next week which focuses on the matches that were taped at the studio that day, I will run down the results that we have of that show. Jake Roberts and Jay Youngblood defeated David Patterson and Steve Seibert. Tommy Rich defeated Jim Barusso. Ivan Koloff defeated Rick Benefield. The Briscoe brothers defeated Mr. Onita and Masafuchi. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated Buck Brannigan. Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson defeated Private Kernoodle and Don Gilbert. Private Kernoodle? Hey, wait a second. We're going to have some stuff we're going to need to talk about. And Joyce Grable apparently defeated Princess Victoria as well, too. There are the results of the week that was there. Anything you take in from any of the results, either from the Carolinas or from up in Toronto or out in the Midwest or over in the mountains in Knoxville?
Well, one thing I would have loved to have been in attendance for back then would have been Flair versus Steamboat. As great as their series of matches was in 89, from what I hear, the matches were even better earlier on. If that's even, it's hard to even wrap your mind around that because their series is just absolutely classic, what they had in 89. But to see them in 82, that would have been fun to be in the arena and see Flair versus Steamboat back then.
And unfortunately, we won't get that next week on the show, nor will we get it on February 20th when we get back to reviewing shows. And we will give you the preview of that show right now. Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen receive a message from Ray Stevens before taking to the ring to compete in a tag team match main event, plus NWA United States Champion Sergeant Slaughter, Mid-Atlantic Television Champion Ivan Koloff, and many more in action. I want to thank everybody on our network, to everybody here at the Arcadian Vanguard family who reached out to us and been awesome to us. Roman, appreciate you coming on with me again this week. Apologize to everyone over the delay in getting the show out there. We just weren't happy with the last one. We listened back. It wasn't a good show. And any creative editing we tried didn't quite work out as well, too. So we just decided to go ahead and shelve the thing. You deserve better than to hear a substandard podcast. We really appreciate you hanging out with us. All of our social media, no matter what it is, whether it be YouTube or Vimeo or Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Mid-Atlantic Pod. We will digress no more and just get you out of here. And there's no better person to do that than the man with the golden voice. Uncle Bob, give it to me.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.